Somebody told me the other day that hurricanes are all supposed to have female names because it's a hurricane. That can't possibly
be right. No, that's fake.
That's not right.
Ike is a boy's name. Harvey is a boy's name.
Right.
I just want to make sure that like I'm not crazy. I'm like, that's got to be dumb, right? That can't be a real thing.
Right.
I mean, I think for a period, they were all female names.
But not because it was a hurricane. Right?
No, it's
probably just sexism.
Right.
Yeah.
If it had been a himicane, I think we're going to...
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. With me as always, this is Patrick Hasroff, but with me as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Yes. The hurricane didn't rustle up some success for you.
What about
the hemicane?
That's right. Yeah. I need to find a good hemicane.
Nice.
It's my path to the top.
That's right.
Are they a cane?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So
representation.
Yeah. It matters. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we need representation in our national disasters.
We don't want to, force gender upon the storm, right? We want the storm to be able to self-identify.
I know. I saw this thing the other day that was talking about how more women than previously thought are actually psychopaths, and it's just so nice to see women in male-dominated
fields.
There
it is.
Break through that glass ceiling.
Right.
And then stab somebody with it.
Get in there, ladies.
Beryl was an interesting name, though.
I kind of liked that name. Have we gone
through every other name? We're like, let's just throw out Beryl.
Well, we discovered that William is on the list this year. So if we get to W, we're in trouble. Though if we get to W, we're in trouble in general.
Right.
That's been
What was it? Hurricane A?
It was like Antonio or it was something. Yeah, it was off in the thing and never really.
They reset every year. They don't just keep the
They reset every year. And they have the names like pre-listed for like the next 5 or 6 years. So they already like in 2028, they know what the names are going to be for the storms.
Interesting. You feel like eventually you'd be like. The well of A names is running a little dry.
Sure. Right.
Well, and sometimes they get retired, so that well gets even shorter, right? If it's a really bad story. Like Harvey will never be used again. Andrew will never be used again.
We're going to have, in a few years, we're going to have hurricanes named Leaf.
Northwest.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that a hurricane or a celebrity band?
Right.
It's impossible to tell.
I don't know. I don't care about it either way. That's fine.
Speaking of hurricane, we got some hurricane news for us.
A hurricane hit. Is that the news?
Yeah, the news.
Yes, we
you
had
heard
a hurricane.
It here last.
We did not do a podcast last week because we had a hurricane.
We did. Did you miss us?
I did a 1 minute.
You did do that.
Oh, you did.
Yeah. And you did a wonderful job of telling everybody why we didn't have a podcast.
I didn't listen to it.
If you're paying attention, you should probably know. Yeah. I mean, look, we had a hurricane.
Hey, some people might be paying attention and not know that we're in Houston.
That's true. Yeah. We my family went to College Station and stayed in Airbnb for 4 nights. We had 8 nights. Without power.
Yeah.
That's a lot of nights.
That's a lot of nights.
Too many. In Houston heat, that is too many. Too many nights.
Yes. So after night one, my youngest woke up crying and I held him for 2 hours. And we were both like just so like sweating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's just book an Airbnb. And if the power comes back on, well, we wasted, some money, but it did not.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Money well spent.
Yeah. How about y'all? Y'all, everybody?
No, let's not do this.
How about it, Elise? Yeah. How was your hurricane?
He already knows because he asked me before I came in.
Had power.
We never lost power.
Lucky you. That's
what
great.
About you, David?
You did lose internet for 8 hours, I heard.
Wow.
So, my cross to bear.
Oh, goodness. We were trying to get back from our vacation, so we got delayed a day and then came back, and we got power back shortly after we got home. Yeah. So the house lost power for, like, I don't know, 36, something like that, hours, but we were okay.
It was a good time to not be here.
It was a good time
to not
be here.
Great time to not be here, yeah.
Yeah, there was a period of time when we were in Denver trying to get home, and we're like, do we want to go home? Right. Or do we want them to just, like, rebook us for another day? What's the best? We came home, and we got power back shortly after that, so... But there are still like hundreds of thousands of people who don't have power.
Yeah.
So there is keeping mindful of them and many people with downed trees and whatnot.
For sure. Yeah. We have a hole in our garage, so we'll be getting that fixed. Yeah.
No good.
I call that the door. That's how I get into my garage. Is that you have a different hole?
That's it.
It's the hole.
Like, I was like, I never noticed this here before.
What is this? Strange outbuilding.
Hurricane, solving problems.
There you go.
Thank you, Beryl.
I can finally get in here. I'm trying.
Speaking of the hurricane, though, if you were in Houston, you'd probably know. If you were in Houston, you didn't have power, so only one of us. Yeah. You should probably recognize that.
Loser.
That getting information, especially like where is their power, was hard to find.
I did hear about this. Yeah.
That getting it for us, Centerpoint is the name of our power company.
Yeah.
They were not very communicative, and any information they had was outdated and very, very late to the party.
Yes.
Like they said, like, hey, by the way, end of day on Friday, you're going to get your update on when your power is coming back on. The hurricane was on Sunday night. Right. So like, and then Friday night at 9 p.m., they sent me an email saying, we'll get you an email here today. Like, it's 9 p.m.
Yeah,
like,
that's not happening. Yeah.
Yeah, it did not happen. So they were not very communicative. So we're here, like, if you're thinking, hey, how am I going to figure out where there's power in the city, right? Do my loved ones have power? Are there pockets? Can we go to a place where there's a gas station that works or a grocery store open? What do you do, right? How do you figure that out?
I actually know what you should do, but I don't want to ruin the surprise. So you go ahead. Yeah. You let us in.
What you do is you open up the Whataburger app.
That's right.
Really? That's this like Waffle House now? Like this,
Whataburger? Yeah, Whataburger. Okay. Yeah. In fact, they were like, move over Waffle House. Whataburger is the new,
You open up that Whataburger app and it tells you where there's power. Because the Whataburger app, all the Whataburgers that do not have power grayed out.
Yeah.
And so you can see the pockets of the city
where
there's these orange Whataburger signs. And they're like, that's where there's power. Grayed out. No power.
Yeah.
So like, that's what you got to do. That Whataburger app, saving lives.
Right. Yeah.
There were a lot of people who were complaining that Whataburger had a more efficient power like system than CenterPoint, which...
That does seem sad.
It is sad. Yeah. It's also maybe not the whole story, right? Like, there's lots of things to be angry at CenterPoint about. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're trying to track millions of people's homes, not just, I don't know, 50, 70 locations.
Right.
Whatever. Maybe a different thing. Anyway.
What am I saying?
Check Whataburger. Check Waffle House. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can't do, Whataburger?
Damn. Serve food quickly, weirdly. Like, they're always slow.
They're pretty slow.
I don't know why. Like,
I think when it comes to fast food, it is a higher standard or higher quality.
I agree. It is
better. But it is slow.
Is it because they're like making it right then? Is that like, are they killing the cow as they make
my
burger?
I think it's because they also have fajitas. And so you can be that one person that gets in the line and order fajitas and they have to go to a separate grill and it throws everything
off.
Like
it's gluten free?
Like, I think they do. I know somebody who used to be like a cook at Whataburger.
Yeah.
He said the fajitas were always like, that's like a 10-minute process in and of itself.
Well, if I know
that,
the
person
start...
in front of me is always ordering fajitas, is what you're saying.
There's always one.
I'm going to start being that guy. I'm going to go get some fajitas if they're, you know.
I've heard they're good. I've never had Whataburger, but I've heard they're good.
Any Whataburger?
At all? Never?
No, never.
Okay. Interesting. Are you just too good for fast food or what?
No, I've just never done it. I don't know. Like, my go-to is just, we didn't have Whataburger in South Carolina.
Sure.
Yeah. So
it was new for me when I got here.
Right. Like, I just never am like, I want a really cheap burger today. That's the place you end up, I feel, you know?
Mm-hmm. I hear that.
Again, if you're getting a fast food burger, it is definitely a higher quality than McDonald's, Jack in the Box, Burger King.
Yeah.
All of those. It is above them.
A tier above.
A tier above. Maybe even two tiers. I don't know. Yeah. So
we should do a taste test.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it right now.
We're back. It was really good.
Wait a minute.
I get the number 5, the bacon cheeseburger, or the patty melt.
So patty melt. Yeah, okay.
That's my
go-to. Patty melt sounds
good.
Well,
now we got to try the fajitas. So
Yeah.
Well,
we're going to go get lunch after
this. We'll see you next week because it's evidently slow.
Yeah.
The person in front of me with Whataburger, I think, has never been outside before, too, because they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to order. They don't know how to pay every time the person in front of me. So
Yeah.
This is from the Whataburger CEO. Ed Nelson. We're glad the Whataburger app has been helpful to Houston residents to understand where power is available to the city. Keep in mind, the app should only be used as a general idea of power availability, and we encourage residents to call local units to see if they are open and operating. Everyone, please be safe if you leave your home. CenterPoint, tough to call. So, you know, like, you know, maybe that's a great idea in theory.
Yeah.
We did drive out on Monday to go look around. Let's see what the damage is, what's going on.
So that's what you do after
And we did see a handful of places that did have power, you know, about 15 minutes from our home. We did a loop. And, I mean, the line to go to Burger King was like 150 cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
not worth it.
Yeah. And like, you wait that long and like Burger King is on the other side.
Right.
If it was Chick-fil-A, I feel like they would have gotten those 150 cars out in like 10 minutes.
Bam, bam,
you know,
bam.
Like,
crushing up.
They would have, but.
When we came back from the airport, we hit like right as Sawdust, which is a street near us, that they got power back. And so the Chick-fil-A had just opened. And so we got in line. And like as we left, there were like 30, 40 cars behind us. But we got in line and there were only 2 cars in front of us.
Well,
that was
well timed.
Prime timing on that one.
So that's a hurricane.
There it is.
Yeah.
But in major news over the last week and a half, we did not just have a hurricane.
That wasn't even all that happened. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we also had an assassination attempt.
Not on us.
Not on us.
Yeah. Just to clarify.
Unless somebody sent Beryl after me. You failed.
Missed.
I'm back.
Maybe that's the kind of thing we shouldn't joke about. I'm just going to throw that out there that maybe...
All right.
We're not best known for not joking about things.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm just going to go on record as saying maybe that was one that we should have left unsaid.
I think it's funny.
Okay. So there was an assassination attempt on former President Trump.
Correct.
Or what's his appropriate title?
Yeah. I don't know. Former President Donald J. Trump. Ex-president.
I think former or ex are both acceptable depending on the context.
Or do you just say president?
No, you don't say president because he's not the president.
But is it a title you just have for life?
No, only the... I think if you're talking to him, you could say... You wouldn't say former President Trump if you're speaking to him.
President Trump.
Yeah, I think you might still say president, or I think you might just go with Mr. Trump at that point. But when newspapers of record and things like that refer to him, it's former,
circumstance has moved us apart, and X is we broke up with him.
Sure.
So
it's really not clear that we broke up with anybody.
Depends on how you feel. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Christianity Today used former president.
Okay.
So
that checks out.
Not X. Yeah. They did not break up with him. Yeah.
That sounds right.
But keeping that door open. Yes. Yeah. So,
you don't want to burn a bridge.
That's fine. an attempt was made at his life.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk a ton about what this means. You know, we're not a political podcast. I don't really know. But in light of this, I did see on the social medias some people out there saying, God spared former President Trump.
Yes.
And some people were saying that's why I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah.
Because it's clear God has spared his life. Yeah. God is chosen former President Trump. You know, and curved the bullet and then hit another dude.
Yeah, who was not chosen or spared.
Evidently not.
But was completely innocent that none of us know anything about.
Yeah. So let's talk about this. Did God spare former President Trump?
Is it wrong to just come out and say no?
Right. Is that the simple answer feels.
I guess probably the simplest answer is I don't really know.
That's fair.
Okay. So by that logic, though, didn't God spare Biden more because he didn't even get shot at?
He spared Biden's ears.
Right. I mean.
So I think there's a discrepancy in the logic, right? The logic here is that there was an attack and we don't know what intervened to prevent former President Trump from being shot. We don't know. Right. And we don't know what's intervening to prevent current President Biden. You don't have to call him current president. Sorry.
Biden. Hello, current President Biden.
Yeah. We don't have to.
Is he president of Centerpoint? Of current?
Yeah.
Jeez. Wow. Whew. Such a dad.
Right, we don't know what's intervening to prevent him from being attacked, right?
Sure.
And so, there is an element. We don't know what spiritual forces are at work in any given moment. Is it possible that God intervened in this particular? Yeah, it's possible. It's within the realm of God's ability to do that. My faith does not indicate that God would spare this one individual and not so many other innocent individuals in this way, right? My faith just doesn't say that God works that way.
Yeah.
And I don't wish ill upon President Trump. I don't wish that the bullet had done anything different than it. Well, I do. I wish it hadn't hit anybody, hadn't been fired, all those things, right? But the reality is we don't know how God intervenes in this situation. And to claim the person that I support, survived this attack, and so that means they're ordained by God, that is a big leap. I would say a foolish reading of scripture. I don't think that is an appropriate way to read or understand how God is at work in the world.
Yeah, there were assassination attempts against Adolf Hitler.
Yep.
Including one where a bomb went off in his room, the room he was in and was spared. I don't believe necessarily God is protecting Adolf Hitler in those moments, right? But, I think a fair reading is I'm not entirely sure.
Sure.
Obviously, I think God works in our world.
Yes.
And sometimes I believe God intervenes against evil, and an assassination attempt is an evil thing. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there could be. That doesn't necessarily mean Donald Trump is God's man for the White House.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, like, I don't necessarily believe that. But it's hard to say. I also think it's tough. Like, we also live in a world where we acknowledge, like, children are shot in schools. Yeah. And to be like, well, God spared President Trump. Then we have to wrestle with the question of, like, God doesn't spare 7-year-olds.
Classrooms full of 7-year-olds.
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's much more challenging to, like, that's who God likes, you know, is presidential candidates and not children. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, that's much more difficult to process. So, or maybe it's easy for you, but it's not as easy for me. So.
Yeah.
Not just you two, but like, you know, the universal you. Yeah.
I think we both understood what you were driving at there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think speaking on behalf of God's efforts in this world is foolish.
Mm.
And so to say, with those out there, including those politicians or pastors, speaking with confidence what God is up to in regards to the life of former President Donald Trump is fairly foolish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Particularly when you think that God's own son gave his life, right? Yes. Like, death is the path for us into something new and better and what God intends for us in its fullness. Like, that. That's the only way. Holding on to this life is never the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. So for me, this does not change the equation on how I will be voting in November or how I feel about former President Donald Trump. Because I don't necessarily would say with confidence God did anything one way or the other. Sometimes bullets miss. Sometimes they hit.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And to attribute every miss to God, I think also attributes every hit to God in a sense that God chose not. He chose not to intervene on those moments.
Yeah.
And that's much more, or chose to curve it towards a person.
Yeah.
You know, and that's much more difficult to understand.
Yeah.
I also think in American Christianity,
that's the kind of Christianity we're in.
We have lost sight of a lot of things that Jesus talks about. You know, Jesus talks about, like, the importance and value of things that are small and relatively insignificant. You know, lost coins, lost sheep, prodigal sons. Like, those would matter to Jesus. And he never talks about Caesars and kings and governors and things like that. Like, he's never like, God is watching over those people. It's always like the insignificant that God is concerned about.
Yeah.
And I think American Christianity has, like, flipped that pretty significantly, where who are the most important amongst American Christianity? Presidents, megachurch pastors, authors, those that speak in front of thousands. Those are our heroes and who should be emulated from every position, right? And that's not what Jesus seems to be about. Like, Jesus is very much clear, like, we're about the insignificant, the forgotten, the small, and the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And so to say, like, God has a hedge of protection around, you know, former President Trump, you know, one of the most powerful people on the planet because he's running for president and he's incredibly wealthy. I think that's missing the point of, like, what God is about in this world.
Yeah.
You know, God is about an immigrant mother, and God is about person with no power in Houston who's 90 years old and doesn't know what to do or doesn't even know how to open that Whataburger app. God is about those people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that matters too. Any other thoughts on this?
No, I think that does a pretty good job.
Yeah. I don't think anything good is going to come out of this.
It's hard to see how it will.
Yeah.
You know, I guess if I hope anything, I hope that maybe former/ex-President Trump feels some responsibility to maybe change his rhetoric a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, when you have used violent rhetoric, you know, proven violent rhetoric for a long time that results in violence and somebody dies as a result of that. I hope
One of his supporters.
One of his supporters even dies as a result of that. I hope that.
Yeah.
I don't think it will, but I hope that is cause for some self-reflection and some change in his approach and the way that he speaks going forward.
Yeah, at least, you know, like, hopefully a brush with, like, his own mortality, right? Mm-hmm. Like, knowing, like, I was inches away from death on camera.
Right,
like, truly, like, inches away. And to think, like, that hopefully could lead somebody to a greater respect and understanding of, like, life is precious and fragile, and what we do with it matters. Mm-hmm. That's a hope, right?
Right.
You know, we're already seeing from senators like that Biden ordered this execution, which is like, that's crazy talk, right? Because it's also from the same people. Like, Biden's super old and can't do anything, and he's also ordering executions. Like, you know, he's also, you know, Biden is like too old to do anything, and he's also like an evil genius mastermind, you know?
Right.
Like,
you can't be both.
Yeah. Or he could be whatever you want him to be, you know, depending on how on the day of the week, right? Yeah. So, I don't think this is going to lead to a greater sense of civility between the two sides. Hmm. But I hope it does.
We'll see.
I hope it does. Yeah. Here's the hoping.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that we can say with a little bit of certainty is that God desires all people to be, right, reunified with God. And, like, that's the goal. And, yeah, whatever moves forward from this, if there's some way that both sides of this process can be more closely aligned with God, that would be the one thing that I can say with a bit of confidence that God is working towards.
For sure.
I don't know how that plays into this, but...
Yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy week.
Yeah. So. That was all in like a 5-day period.
I know.
6 days? I guess 6 days.
We deserve a little treat.
What do we get?
Whataburger.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But he is. Great.
Sounds good.
Yeah, there's milkshakes.
Oh, okay. So I'll take a milkshake.
Yeah. I drink a milkshake right now. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about, our second topic, because we knew we were going to...
A real topic.
Our real topic, yeah. Well, that was a real topic.
Well, but like our main story.
We have like two short topics today.
Yeah. Why the Church Has to Reject Toxic Positivity by Sarah Cormany from Relevant.
Because toxins are bad for you.
That's what the liver's for.
Got a detox. I got a detox positivity.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about a little bit. How do you view... I agree. Have you seen toxic positivity in church? Let's start there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. I think anytime when you're in like really terrible situations and someone comes in and it's like their first response is to go with, well, you know, God's going to see you through it.
Right. Or, he brought you to it. He'll bring you through it.
Yeah. Or you know, God's always going to give you a silver lining, or sure. God's never going to give you more than you can handle, or, God's got a plan. Right. And when you're in the throes of something that's really awful and terrible and hard, being, you know, expected to just put on a positive space and say, God's going to be, it's all going to be fine. Like, that's toxic positivity. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if we read anything from the Psalms, Lamentations, other portions of scriptures, that lament is a really important part of faith. And like being angry at God is legitimate, and being angry at the world is legitimate, and having, you know, fear and heartbreak and pain, all of those things are real experiences that are meant to be felt and experienced in the context of God's love. And eventually, you know, all of those places, people come to a place where they remember God's goodness and faithfulness, but that doesn't happen immediately. And so when that's forced upon you in the midst of your darkest moments, yeah, that's just, it's toxic. It's unhealthy. It's not good faith. It's not good theology.
Yeah. So let's say maybe, what is the difference between like just positivity and toxic positivity? Like, what makes positivity toxic?
Mm. I guess all positivity is not supposed to be toxic.
No,
is it?
Yeah. Generally speaking, I think positivity is a good thing.
Yeah.
We're pro-positivity.
Pro-positivity here.
I'm positive on that, yes.
I think positivity has its place. I think when you're forcing positivity as an expectation on someone else, mm-hmm. and you're not allowing space for someone to not be positive,
sure.
that's where it becomes toxic, right? So
if
you're coming into a conversation with me and my only response to you is to try to make you be positive about something, that's toxic. If I'm creating space for you to be angry, grieve, whatever you need to do, and in the space of that, I'm, you know, cultivating an opportunity for us to have conversations about God's faithfulness, I think that's a different view of positivity, that you're able to journey towards positivity. You're not just expected to be in positivity all the time.
Yeah. I probably, when positivity gets in the way of you actually processing your actual feelings, then that becomes toxic, right?
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, positivity, there's all kinds of scientific studies about positivity being, you know, better for you mentally and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like it is good to be positive, but not when it is to such an extent that you are not actually feeling how you actually feel.
Yeah.
Look, I consider myself a positive person. Me too. I'm a known optimist.
You consider Patrick a positive person?
No, I consider myself a positive
person. I am an optimist. I'm optimist about my life and I'm an optimist about this world. I do think things are getting better. Even when bad things are happening, I think the world is getting better. And I think that my mantra on most things is like, it's all going to work out. It's going to be okay. Because it has so far. You know, like that's just the reality. Like,
and it does make going on mission trips with Patrick a roller coaster of a ride.
I bet.
It's
great. Sounds fun.
It's all going to work out.
It's great.
Because it's got to. There's only one way, you know.
Yeah.
And either it is as we all die or it all worked out.
Or it's fine. Not a lot of in between.
There is no between. There's no other alternative. Either everybody's dead or all
die. But I think I'm wrestling with this because I do think toxic positivity is awful. But also, I know I've worked with like teenagers before who are choosing to be negative in a situation where they don't have to be.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I have told them, meaning like, you're choosing this attitude. Like, you are choosing this and you can choose something better. And I don't think that that is toxic positivity.
I would agree. Yeah.
But
so, I also don't think you're forcing anything upon them. I think you're helping them see that there's another opportunity for them there.
Right.
Right, you've given them space. You've heard that what they're dealing with, and you're able to say like, you're choosing this. Like you're choosing to remain in this negative space. Like that's okay. I would agree. That's not toxic.
Yeah,
it could be, but it's not.
Yeah. Sure. So I think there can be like, even in grief and mourning, pointing to hope is positive.
Absolutely.
I think toxic positivity is like pretending that there is no mourning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know that I think that is, or trying to, in that grief process, like hit the gas as hard as possible.
Yeah.
You know, during the hurricane when my wife and I were, took our kids to a Airbnb in College Station and we kind of like left our house for 8 days while we waited for our AC to come back on. You know, we can acknowledge to one another, like, this was really hard. Like, this is a hard place to be. This is not a thing we were planning to spend money on. This is not something we expected to have happen this week. We have a lot of things happening and there needs to be space for it to be hard. And at the same time, like, we're okay. Our family's okay. We're in a good spot. Our kids are having fun. Like, there could be space for joy and excitement in the midst of something that's really difficult, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, trying to find space for both, I think, is a real level of positivity, you know, like, but trying to have one force the other out, I think it's toxic.
Yeah.
Because there's toxic negativity, too.
Sure.
All right. Sarah here's got 5 ways to combat toxic positivity with intention.
Combat. Number one.
Lamentations. Great. That'll do it.
Punch them in the throat.
Punch that negativity.
How did we go from reading scripture to punching people in the throat?
Combat.
That's what he said. We're supposed to combat toxic positivity.
Number one, embrace the grace of silence.
Embrace the grace. Okay. It's basically shut up.
Number one, shut your mouth.
You know, for a lot of people, that's probably a good first step.
Yeah.
The best way for you to not inflict toxic positivity is probably just to not say anything.
Solid default is to shut up.
We can say it politely. We can just be quiet. Embrace the grace of silence, as our author said. Yeah,
it's very sweet.
I think this is from Bambi, right? Like, if you don't have anything positive to say, like, just don't say anything at all.
It's actually Thumper said it to Bambi.
Like, from the movie Bambi. Yeah.
I'll just clarifying that wasn't Bambi who said it. For all of our Bambi fans, we didn't want to get that email.
That's nerd.
But I think
you said it too. All right.
The grace of silence. Yeah. If you're sitting with somebody with mourning and you're like, I'm not entirely sure what to say to make this better. I think acknowledging like, I can't.
Yep.
And really presence might be the best I can do right now. And that honestly is in many ways the most important thing you can give. Right. Like, I'll sit with you in this. And so I think that's kind of what she's talking about here. Like, in the midst of something that's heavy, just having people around you, you know, holding you or like sitting with you is grace, right? Like,
yeah.
And that's not like you're mourning, he's in a better place.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just you're mourning and just saying like, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, like we can be okay. We'll just sit.
You can be
together.
In mourning and that's okay.
Yeah. I think asking the person like what they need is usually pretty helpful. Say, hey, what do you want? Do you want me to listen to you? Do you want me to distract you? Like, what is going to support you the best right now?
One of the best questions that I think Jesus asks, and he does it a couple of different places, is what do you want me to do for you? Right? To the people who come up to him and cry, what do you want me to do for you? And I think we could do a lot. Like, you know, we have to be careful because it can come off very harsh if you're not doing it appropriately. But like, say like, what do you want? What do you want me to do for you in this situation?
Yeah.
Like, how can I be supportive of you in this situation? I think is really valuable.
Number two, learn from our own pain.
Okay.
Hmm.
So is that like, what did I want when I was in pain? Is that the idea here?
I think so. She kind of tells a story that her dad died of a massive brain aneurysm.
Hmm.
And a friend of her came up to me and said, I thought I wanted someone to understand what this pain feels like, but I realized that what it until I realized what it would cost them. Like a friend who also had a parent die. So I think you're learning, like, in my mourning, I kind of understand other people's mourning, right?
Sure.
Like I understand, like, when I went through this, the forced toxic positivity upon me was a burden, and I don't want to put that burden on someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even though it is easier to speak in platitudes, and those things, like, that doesn't actually help anything. In fact, it makes it many times worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. The only caveat I would put on that is if, in your own experience, what you've learned is toxic positivity, I would not want you to learn to pass that on, right? Like, sure. I think that's a real thing, too.
Right? Right.
You know, if that's all you've ever learned, then that's all you know to pass on. And so I just put that as a caveat to that.
Yeah.
Learn the good things from you.
Which sure. brings us back to number one, which is shut up.
Embrace the grace of silence. I'm going to start using that with the people. When I want to tell them to shut up, I'm going to say, I think we should all just embrace the grace of silence for a moment. That's going to be my new code word.
Now I know. If you say it in a staff meeting, I'll be like, I
know he's not going to. He's big mad. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Not the time for a joke.
This is completely off topic, but when I first became a pastor, I was often running between services and would need to go to the bathroom, but didn't feel like I could tell people that I needed to go to the bathroom. So I was always trying to come up with like code phrases that I could use to like tell people that I needed to stop having this conversation, but without having to say it anyway. That's...
Why can't you tell people that you need to go to the bathroom?
I don't know. It's just
like, I'm so sorry. I need to use the restroom.
It just felt like it wasn't what I was supposed to say.
I had a breakfast burrito. Like,
I'm not saying
the pastor got a pee. Right?
I'm not saying I was perfect when I first became a pastor. I'm just saying these
I need to go check the baptismal.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, I've got a pastoral emergency I need to deal with. Or yeah,
is that what you said?
I would not say that because people would think something was actually wrong. Right. But those were things that I tried out in my head anyway.
What did you land on?
I never came up with a good one.
Well, you should have asked us.
I just had to go to the bathroom a lot.
Yeah.
Held it.
Catheter.
Right.
Number three, set aside the timeline.
I don't even know what that means at this point. I'm sorry. Set aside the timeline?
Yeah. I think it's saying...
positivity? You don't have to be like, oh, it's been 7 days. Now you're better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof, yeah.
Yeah, I think this is tough because like obviously some people... choose to or kind of dwell in grief for a long time. And I think sometimes they can be, maybe even should be nudged out of that dwelling in grief.
Right.
I think it's just, this is tough to think like, well, it's been X amount of time. I should be over it.
Yeah.
And I think, grief doesn't work that way.
Like
sometimes the loss of someone you love or somebody, something tragic happening to you can pop up at any time, years down the road. Right. No, I don't think you should dwell in it. I don't think that is helpful for you. But I think the reality is like if you've lost somebody that you care about, 20 years later, there could be a day where you just feel that loss.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's just going to be the reality.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the theme that I'm seeing that runs through this is how is the person who's experiencing the pain, how is their experience driving their movement through grief towards positivity? And how are we basing our response off of their experience rather than our expectations? I think that's a big through line that I'm seeing in these.
Sacrifice comfort for compassion.
Sacrifice my own comfort?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So rather than me feeling comfortable, I should be compassionate. Yeah. I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm. I think this is, it's comfortable for me to share like platitudes. Mm-hmm. Like, let me show you about my experience.
Yeah.
And things like that. That's comfortable. Compassion is different. Right. So, it's focusing more on their needs than my own. And I think that's really hard. I think most of us don't really know how to do that.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge.
You're getting ready to take a group of middle schoolers on a mini mission trip.
I am not.
But oh, that's right, you're not anymore.
Somebody is.
Somebody is.
We have
a new person in that role. Anyway, we're getting ready to, and in the past, we have taken those kids to serve meals to the homeless or other things that put them in really uncomfortable situations. And one of the things that I've heard you say to them and heard you have those conversations with is, right, how do you put your own comfort aside?
Yeah.
Right, because it would be easier for them, for these middle schoolers to stand against a wall and like just like hand somebody a thing and then sure. go back? Or how do you put your comfort aside in order to allow this person to experience their world and whatever yeah. that looks like? And I think it's a really good valuable yeah. lesson.
I try to acknowledge when it comes to working with the homeless, or we go to sometimes a special needs home for sure. adults, like this is scary, like yeah, that this okay. is hard, like this is going to be a hard thing for you. It also might be, when we talk about this, the best part of your week.
Yeah.
Like this mm-hmm. might be what stands out the most. And some kids still talk about some of those experiences they've had mm-hmm. and they don't talk about some of the things that were easy.
Yeah.
Like working at the food bank was easy and fun, sure. but this is what stands out. Mm-hmm. So I try mm-hmm. to acknowledge, like, it will be hard. Like that's going to happen, but it will also be maybe the best thing you do.
Yeah.
So, all right. Lean in and love well. That sounds kind of like the same one.
Yeah. like, yeah. I'm good with that. We should right. do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have that sign at Hobby Lobby, I think. Next to the live, laugh, love.
Live, laugh, love, lean in, love right? well.
And the sign that says, no bad days.
That seems like toxic
positivity.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no bad days would definitely be a toxic positivity motif. Yeah.
It would.
Yeah. All right, that's it. Yeah, I think toxic positivity is definitely an issue for the church.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we put it on other people. Yeah. You should be positive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things the church does worst is put things. Wait, did I say that right?
Yeah, sure. We got it.
Yeah. Yeah. You get what I'm saying. Yeah. We do it all too often. And yeah. we put our expectations of positivity and whatever on other people, thinking that that's faithful. And yeah. sometimes it's not, right? Read Lamentations. Read Isaiah or Jeremiah or any of the Psalms. And, you know, there's sadness and anger and frustration and mourning throughout there. So,
yeah, definitely. If you've experienced the love and joy of Jesus, how could you be sad? It's like a crazy thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus got sad.
Jesus did.
Jesus wept when Lazarus died. And he was about to raise Lazarus from the dead.
He sweated blood. I mean, that's pretty intense and sad.
Yeah. So. Do you sweat blood when you're sad? Because I think that's a medical condition that we should talk about.
Yeah.
Maybe after the power went out of my house, right. You guys don't really have to experience that.
No, no. No bad days.
I can have 8 hours of bad day. That's how much I want.
That's one third of a bad day. Yep.
That's my new Hobby Lobby sign.
Right.
One third of a bad day.
Right.
All right. I think that's it.
All right. Yeah. Well, this has been, it's been a week. And if it's been a week for you too, we are with you. We don't expect you to be positive yet. You can be angry and doing whatever you need to do. And we're here. We're here in it with you. We'll be here all summer long, all fall, and hopefully into the future. We'll see what's in store for us all. But if you have thoughts on this episode or anything else, you can send those to beyondcenterpodcast@gmail.com. And then, of course, you can find all of our episodes, which are not all like this, right? This one is a little different, so you can find other ones out there. And you can find that at beyondcenterpodcast.com.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.